But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning. Welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here this morning with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Start producing.
Good morning, Tom. How are you this holiday season?
I'm good. It's a little harried because of, the gift buying and all the other stuff. I have limited amount of time to dedicate to that. So, it's usually all done in one. I go over there with a fistful of credit cards and a personal shopper and just tell her what I want, then go have a glass of wine, come back and pick it up, It's kind of the painless way of doing it, But it's fun. It's fun shopping for my grandkids. That's a hoot.
That is fun.
Yeah, that's fun, because the possibilities are endless and, you can almost revisit your own childhood while you're doing it, things that your grandparents bought you that you really loved and stuff. So, for me, it's a lot of fun to do that.
I'm telling you, this holiday season is a little crazy right now. Again, we're dealing with pandemic issues again. But I was at a local restaurant on Tuesday night, so I would have thought it would be a little quiet. And today's technology and everything is just very funny. So I go online and I go to Open Table and I make a reservation. At least I think I did. And then when I get to the restaurant, I look into the main dining room where I was hoping to sit, and there was a very socially distanced holiday party. Mm-hmm. It was like four tables, but they were in each corner of the dining room.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find my reservation. Not that it mattered, but so they said, did you want to sit in the bar area? And they had a couple of tables, whatever, but it was very loud from this other group, so they said, no, come in the back. Go into the back, there's nobody there.
Yeah.
It's my mom's birthday, and she starts having a little attitude, and I don't mind, She goes, where is everybody? Like, this is where we're sitting,
Siberia?
And then she went on to tell me that, it's in her genes. Her mother was like that. My grandmother was like that. If there was an empty room, it wasn't that. But before the end of the night, the room filled out. There was one table of 20-something firemen. Uh-huh. And they did a very sophisticated way of splitting the room. They hung a tablecloth from the ceiling.
Yeah, that's it's nothing like, Omicron variant is terrifying.
Omicron. Because I have a new sorority I'm joining, Omicron Delta.
Yeah, perfect, But those germs are terrified of, like, sheets, tablecloths, and sitting.
Right.
It's terrified of people sitting for some reason. If you're walking somewhere, like to the bathroom or into the restaurant, you're fair game. If you're sitting, no chance of getting
the virus. It's very confusing. So, anyway, it was my mom's birthday. We went to it is a nice restaurant. I was just trying to, it was expensive, so I was just trying to hold my own. And I made the mistake of ordering a tuna steak. I couldn't eat it.
Really?
And I didn't want to start up with my other guests. It was my mom and two other ladies. And
what was the problem with the tuna?
It was like the end. I don't know. It looked like a triangle, and it was the end, and it was just so tough. It just just wasn't edible.
Wow.
So I took it for the team, and but all I'm getting, I guess, is...
You didn't order it well done, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. I think I ordered it rare.
Oh, all right.
But and it was sesame crusted. Not that that would have...
So just let me get this straight now. You eat your tuna rare and your steak well done.
Yeah.
That's sort of bass-ackwards.
Probably, but, I guess that's because I think that when I eat my sushi, it's raw anyway. But all I'm getting at is this holiday spirit. I mean, this restaurant on a Tuesday was packed.
Yeah, yeah.
Just unbelievable, but yet everything's crazy. We were supposed to go into the city to see a Broadway show. Somebody in the cast had COVID, so they're out for 2 weeks, and other shows just open and are closing. And
I don't know how to feel about all of this. The bottom line is I have another thought on this whole lockdown thing and mask mandates, and I think the cynic in me says part of it has to do with revenue, because they make a lot of money on fines, and the government runs on money. It never has enough.
Yeah, but that be said, here on Long Island, there's a new county executive in Nassau County coming to town. The current one Laura Curran said she was going to look the other way.
Right.
She wasn't really looking to enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
The new one says he probably won't uphold it.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's just very weird. Here, we were supposed to have a holiday party on this past Wednesday, and we did. It was a buffet.
Yeah.
Yet Kerry's office had a holiday party, and it was individually tinned portions.
Yeah. No, the whole thing is that there's more holes than Swiss cheese.
We were supposed to have an official holiday party at a local concert hall. They don't do anything. You can come in if you're vaccinated, unvaccinated, masked, unmasked. Corporate-wise, I guess HR said, no, I guess the employees would have to opt out of something so that the company wasn't held responsible. Then we wanted to go to another one, and it's just everything is complicated right now.
Yeah,
and people that are vaccinated and boosted are still getting sick.
Oh, and there's people that just can't wait to live in fear, too. I mean, it's, the kind of unreasonable worry about... You know, they told us if you're vaccinated, you're good, right? Then they told us if you're boosted, you're good, right? And now they're telling you you're not. I mean, what is it? You know, is it or isn't it?
And the latest that I heard on the news the other day was get your booster, Pfizer or Moderna.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever you do, don't go J&J.
I know. It's the whole thing's so screwed up. You know, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Wear two masks, wear seven masks, wear nine masks. It's crazy.
So let's compartmentalize and let's put that aside and let's talk about the holidays.
All right. Well, you know, Christmas is it's a fun holiday for children and children of all ages, really, and I have a couple of things, I was thinking about it the other day because I'm running around trying to figure out what to get for people. And this is the part of Christmas that I don't like, that I almost prefer Thanksgiving, because you have the same family, the same meal. And just less pressure with the gift thing, you know. And I'm terribly bad at thinking about stuff to get for people. Like, I don't know why I have so much of a problem trying to figure out what to buy. Like, the kids, I know right away, you know. But adults, it's like, and you wind up getting the same thing every year. It's like, can we just do experiences instead of things?
Nah. I got the perfect solution.
What's that?
Thank goodness for FreshFinGourmet.com, our new sponsor.
That was just the most incredible segue I've ever seen in my life.
The holidays are coming.
You are a radio professional.
And you can order your holiday delicacies online. So real quick, FreshFinGourmet.com is mm-hmm. our new sponsor, and they've been with us for the past couple of months. And you can have specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. They also have pastries and pasta and Sicilian desserts. What's really cool is you can get fast delivery and shipping at no cost, I believe. It's FreshFinGourmet.com.
You know, I've just figured out what I'm going to get my ex-wife for Christmas. A couple of octopus tentacles. When she opens up that package, boy, is she going to be surprised.
It will be the gift that sticks with her forever.
That's right. I like that. That's pretty witty. So anyway, yeah, I'm walking around, the stores, and I'm trying to think about...
You're old school.
What to get for people. And I realized that, maybe I could suggest some things, and I haven't done that in a couple of years, for the home cook, for the person who's interested in cooking, which is generally, and not always, but generally... the woman in the house is the one who does most of the cooking. I mean, some of that's changed over the years. It used to be probably in a 90 percentile. Now it's probably in a 60 or whatever. But the bottom line is the person who's in your life that's into food, I have a couple of suggestions and things that you can get. Why don't you ask me what they are?
I'm going to ask you what they are, but I got to ask you a real simple question.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very appreciative for FreshFinGourmet.com.
Yeah.
However, most radio shows have multiple sponsors.
Right.
Now, a lot of the things you're going to be talking about could probably be found at Bed Bath & Beyond. But I'm going to ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it called Bed Bath & Beyond when it's got so much kitchen stuff and they don't even include that in the name of the store?
This is the part of compartmentalizing that I don't understand. But anyway, I used to call it Bed Bath and Bankrupt because when I was trying to furnish a house I had in Florida, I was there three times a day trying to find things like forks and knives and stupid stuff. I don't know. I don't know where the name came from. It's,
but anyway, they have a lot of these interesting kitchen gadgets.
They do. They do. I kind of prefer like a Williams Sonoma for my kind of stuff because I think it's a little more targeted to the real cook. And, you know, I don't mean to denigrate unreal cooks, but, you know, somebody who's really a little more serious would probably be better off going to a Williams Sonoma or a Sur La Table or something like that, you know?
So I got my pad out.
Right.
I think this thought process on your part is wonderful. Old school, going to a brick and mortar.
Borderline brilliant. Yeah.
Really? So yeah. I'm going to list my different recipients that are hoping to get gifts from me. And,
okay.
Let's go through it. Let's go through Tom's list.
All right. Funny you should ask me what they are. I'm gonna tell you.
And understand that Tom's got notes here.
I do.
Tom is really usually all ad-libbed.
Absolutely.
There's nothing scripted. And he's got a quarter-inch thick pad with writing on it.
Well, yeah, it's funny. The writing on it, I've written a couple things down so I wouldn't forget them. But it's also on the pad. I did it on a pad at work. I also have blackberries, bib lettuce, fennel, U15 shrimp, clams, and 15 pounds of tuna on there.
Well, I
don't suggest those.
I guess the club's got a lot of gifts coming its
yeah,
way.
Well, you know, if you you want to get your ex-wife, you know, a dozen clams or something, that's always an option, I imagine. Throw a couple of blackberries in there, too, you know, what the hell. Anyway, so one of the most useful things that you can buy a cook or somebody who loves food is a digital readout thermometer, meat thermometer. And I'll tell you for a couple of reasons. One is we use them all the time in the pro kitchens. Now, I can tell pretty much, you know, the degree of doneness of a steak or, filet mignon or a piece of fish or something. Just kind of by, sometimes even by kind of looking at it, you know, and knowing how long it's been on the flame or two by feeling it. But the real foolproof method is the thermometer, you know, and it's especially handy with roasts and things like that, you know, turkey or roast beef if you put it in the oven. And even some things like sometimes we'll roast a whole filet mignon. And I can tell by squeezing it pretty much where it is. But if you really want to know, you know, you put the thermometer in there and it gives you that readout. And then you know that, you know, 110 degrees is rare, 120 is medium rare, 130 35 is medium, you know, and you get to 40 medium well, 50, 60 well.
And that's real? Yeah, I mean, again, you stick it in.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's unscrew-upable, almost. I have some employees who are capable of screwing up almost anything, but it's almost infallible because it gives you the temperature right away, and as long as you rest the meat when it's done, you know, you're good.
So now, is there a quality level on the thermometer that you're talking about? I mean, is there a brand to go to?
They're all pretty good. I mean, digital stuff is just great. I mean, they run somewhere around the better ones, which, you know, you can probably find them for $8, $10. I would steer away from those, you know, especially if it's somebody you love, you know, spend the extra $20. About $30 is where you're going to land for a good digital readout thermometer.
So I'll venture into my youth. And there was a round dial thermometer,
right,
with a probe that was used.
Right.
Me, myself, and I, not being as savvy as you,
right,
do you put that in your roast and leave it in the oven, or do you pop it out and just keep testing?
I can't believe one of the three of you didn't figure this out. I would just, I wouldn't leave it in because it will tend to roast with the roast, you know. So you just want to check it. You want to put it in there. You take a reading, you know, you wait a couple of minutes. It'll start to go up or whatever or down depending on where you start.
So it's not like the pop-out thing in the turkey.
Not like the pop-out thing in the turkey. No, you don't want to do that. So you want to take it out, just take the reading and then see what it is. Like I said, if you like your meat like stew, if you like it well done, you know, you're going to be in that 160 zone. If you're more like me, a rare, medium, rare guy, it's going to be more in that 105 to 120 zone, you know. And it's foolproof. It'll come out beautiful every time. You won't have to worry about, is it ready 20 minutes per pound? Do I have to feel it? Is it like my hand? And all the other stuff that people go through trying to figure out if the steak is done or not. And it works the same with you know, small steaks or whatever. You can just take a little readout and go. So it takes the guesswork out of it for you. And I think it's an interesting little stocking stuffer. It's a great little present for somebody who's interested in food. And the good news is it's not going to cost you more than $30. So.
And again, you can go into...
Yeah, you could probably find them at Bed Bath & Beyond, Sur La Table, Williams Sonoma. I imagine even a store like Kohl's might have one, you know.
Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart, they may have one. But I suggest, I like Williams Sonoma. I think it's a good store, and they have interesting things. And things that are a little more, you know, geared towards the professional or the higher
end. So it's funny, old school being for some reason, the thermometer... brand that comes to mind is Taylor.
I don't really know. I don't pay too much attention to any of that. The interesting thing about them too is they give you Fahrenheit and or Celsius, which to me is utterly useless. Celsius to me is utterly useless. I don't even know how to read it. I know that zero is freezing and whatever. But other than that, unless you're in England,
if it was still a block of ice. It would read zero, I don't need to.
Yeah, no. I guess with Celsius, you got to wait till it's 100 or something. I don't know. I'd have to check that out. Anyway, next one. Moving on. They have coolest little things. They have. I think the rubber spatula is one of the most important tools out there, because I had an old chef when I first got to CIA. His name was Grazioten. I can't remember his first name, but he was this gruff old. Kind of chef from Europe. I don't remember if he was in Czechoslovakia or Greece or whatever. Anyway, he used to call it the money maker. And at first I didn't know why. And then I realized that, and he told us later on, but I realized first that because he was able to scrape the last bit of sauce or the last bit of potatoes or something, you know, with the rubber spatula, was that. That was the, you know, getting the most out of what you had.
So that's usually the thing that's on a stick. It's rubber. It's usually got a roundish.
Sometimes it's like a little roundish. Sometimes it's just flat on both sides. But it allows you to get everything out of the, you know, of the pot. And, you know, in a restaurant, that's critical. I mean, if I can get two more orders of sauce out of it, it's revenue. I mean, so... And it's you know, it's nice to stir with that because it doesn't scrape or anything like that. But they come monogrammed now. You can get, you know, you can get your name. They come with letters, actually, you know. So if your wife's or husband's name is Fran or Frank, you can get a monogram one with an F on it.
I'm trying to be funny, but mine does come monogrammed. It either says Rayo's or Victoria, because what I do with spaghetti is if there's a lot of sauce still in the jar, because I don't make fresh, I put some spaghetti in it, I shake it up, and then when I pour it back into the bowl, the glass jar is empty.
That's fabulous. Fabulously perfect. I'm not sure what that means, but it's fabulous. Anyway, these, you know, and you can actually, if you want to buy different sizes of these things, you can have, you know, you can spell out the person's name completely, you know, like as long as it's not Gwendolyn or something with 60 letters in it, you know. You know, Maud or whatever, M-A-U-D-E, you know. So they're kind of fun. It's kind of like one of those serendipitous, you know, frivolous things that are good little stuff. But those are cool if you get three of those and mom on them or something, you know. It's kind of dad.
It comes too close to resembling that wooden spoon that mom used to beat me with.
Yeah, I know. My mother was the greatest threatener on the face of the earth. Nobody threatened like my mother. She never really came through. She actually told me she was going to rip my arm off and beat me with the bloody stump. I was like, you know, I wasn't even scared because it was so ridiculous, you know.
Mom would come after me with the wooden spoon. Dad would come after me with the belt.
Yeah,
they had it all done.
That's why you became a sprinter in high school. All right, next one. Now the spatulas, they're like $15 or whatever. You know, you get a couple of those. They're kind of cool, you know, with the initials or whatever. This one's a little bit kind of for the serious cook. It's a cast iron pan or a cast iron casserole by La Creuset. L-E, new word, C-R-U-S-E-T, I believe it is. And they make, and Staub, S-T-A-U-B, is another manufacturer of cast iron and really kind of high-end pots. And a lot of these things come in different colors. You know, they coordinate with your kitchen. They're great that way. And they're great to cook stews in and casseroles and, you know, mac and cheese and things like that. They just have that. You know, cast iron is great because it holds the heat. You know, the worst pot to cook in is a thin pot because it burns, you know. The cast iron, it spreads the heat out a little more and kind of diffuses
it. So when you get a gift like this, am I right that it has to be either treated or seasoned or something?
A lot of them do. A lot of them have to be seasoned, which is basically just a little bit of oil heated up, you know, wipe it out and you're good, you know. These are kind of expensive. They're not cheap. They, you know, they run between, depending on the size, between probably $220 and $500 or something, you know.
And what's the maintenance on it? I mean, if I cook a steak on my cast iron pan, there's usually residue.
Yeah.
But am I supposed to, you know, like use steel wool and clean
that
off?
No, most of these are, you can, you know, with cast iron, you can do that, you know. Some of these others have sort of, non-stick inside. It's just soapy water and, you know, kind of a rag or whatever, clean it out. But they're really good. And like I said, you know, I use them at the restaurant a little bit. You know, for certain things, you know, not so much cooking and more presentation for me. But like I said, they come in gorgeous colors, is blues and reds and yellows and stuff. So, and you can display them, you know, on your kitchen counter. They're really nice. Courtney has a couple home.
So I seriously was looking at pots last night and I was in a store. And again, just like you said, there's some that have a metal handle, some have a wooden handle, some are in all different colors or whatever. And
yeah, you know, when you talk about sauté pans and pots like that, the ones that annoy me from the home cooks are the ones that have those kind of curved handles or round handles. Because the round handles tend to move in your hand. You know, I don't like them. We have one pot that I never use over at the club that has a round handle. And by round, I mean, you know, cylindrical, right? And it's just, it's brutal because you don't, there's no way to grip it really, you know? Because I always have a rag in my hand because everything in there is either hot or sharp, you know? I mean, I'm just curing a burn now, it's healing. But it's very uncomfortable. And the ones with those bent handles, the ones that have a little curvature to them, I don't like the way they feel either, you know? I'm just kind of a traditional.
So it's funny, I'm an old school guy. I grew up with I think it's called Revealware. That's the one with the copper color on the bottom and the metal, some like hard plastic type of handle.
Yeah.
But
I remember them. I was actually a spokesmodel for Cafelon for a while.
Really? That's a high-end brand?
Yeah, Cafelon's it. I used to do shows for them over in the malls and stuff, you know. And the brands were fine. You know, I liked them. I thought Cafelon was pretty good. The handles were great. That's really what I judge home pots on. I mean, the stuff that we use in the commercial kitchens is completely different, you know. But, and my advice is get a thicker bottom pot if you're going to get a pot to use. And, you know, that's where you make your roux and you know, you can cook cream in there or stews in there, thicken stuff that it's not going to burn like it would in a thin bottom pot. But those Le Creuset cast iron pans and pots are very cool, but they're very expensive, so it's one of those things where it's a commitment. Make sure that somebody's going to appreciate it because it's really up there. Next one is kind of interesting is, and I thought of this because I did a live crepe thing for a party last week. They wanted like a crepe station on their dessert buffet, you know. So I was making crepes to order, which if you've never done that, you should try it once. It's exciting, you know.
Well, I know at a catering hall, it's usually pretty simplistic. Sometimes I see just a round plate that they pour the crepe onto. I guess you're saying that obviously at home it's probably different. You use a regular pan.
Yeah, well, those big crepe machines, you know, you pour it onto that flat thing, and then they got that like almost looks like a squeegee, and they, you know, they go around with it and they flatten out the crepe. That's great if you want to buy one. I'm going to spend $1,000. Go ahead, but you know you're going to make 9 crepes in, you know, the course of your life. You know, you probably don't need it. But they have these crepe pans that are kind of flat like that, and you know, I generally make them in sauté pans, and all it takes, you need a nonstick pan for that, you know, or a pan that's really been seasoned, because if you don't, you're going to have a problem. But the crepe pans, they come with a nonstick Teflon, whatever they use. I don't know what the compound is anymore. But they have the surface that's nonstick, and you know, it's a little tricky. What you're doing is you're going to pour a little bit of crepe batter into the pan, and you're going to kind of turn the pan around.
It's almost like doing an omelet, right?
Yeah, well, a little.
I mean, the crepe is a lot thinner.
Yeah, but unless you know, you're not kind of working it around. You're constantly moving the pan around to get the batter to spread out because you don't have that squeegee thing there, you know. And then, you know, just flip it over and do it again. But the crepe pans are, you know, they're inexpensive and they're kind of fun. I mean, they're probably $35-$40, something like that. And, you know, they're fun at a house party or for a dessert. You know, if you have a bunch of people over, you can make a couple of crepes and put out some fruit, a Nutella or whatever you're going to fill them with, you know, and a little powdered sugar on the top.
Something comes to mind when professionals are making crepes. Is it like some sort of wooden rake or something that you were just describing or something?
What, the squeegee?
I guess is that what it is?
Yeah, it's kind of like a squeegee. It just kind of flattens the batter out, you know, as you put it on. But they're fun to make, and you know, you can make a little ahead. You know, you can, you know, I mean, I had a buffet for like 80 people, so I had a bunch, you know, I was making crepes like crazy. I had a couple pans going, three pans or whatever. But, you know, if you know, you're home, it's, you know, it's just you and the family, or you invite some people over. It's kind of a fun dessert. You can lay out, like I said, some, you know, we had four different types of berries. We had raspberries, strawberries, blackberries, and blueberries laid out there. I had some bananas that was sliced.
Can you even use, like, preserves and stuff like that?
Sure. Or, yeah, any of that.
I mean, I had a neighbor that one night had everybody over, and she was busy making Nutella and banana and everything.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, like, if you have, you know, different marmalades. Or,
yeah, you can use whatever you want in there. I mean, I wouldn't, like, fill it with that, you know, because it's going to get a little cloying afterwards, like a mouthful of jelly. But you could spread it, you know, on there with the fruit. You know, if you took, you know, raspberry jelly and just spread it on the crepe inside and then put fresh raspberries. And I wouldn't put whipped cream in there because the crepes tend to be a little warm when they come off there. It just melts, you know. But you could serve that whipped cream on the side, you know, because they'll cool down at some point, the crepes. And then just, you know, on the top, I drizzle like a chocolate sauce or a caramel or something like that and some powdered sugar. And you got yourself kind of a fun little dessert buffet there, you know. So that's always a, you know, a good good little thing to buy. Next one is basically it's the cheapest little thing you ever saw in your life, and it's probably the most useful. And I may buy this for somebody I know because she makes a lot of guacamole. It's called a guac lock, and a guac lock is, you know, when you make guacamole and, you know, you don't finish it all. And next day you go back, it's all brown on top, and you got to scrape that brown off. It's about, you know, like a quarter to a half an inch of brown on top. You're throwing that away, right? And then, you know, sometimes that only the second or third day, you go in there and, you know, where you scooped out, the brown goes down.
You know, the old wives' tale is you keep the pit in there, and it's supposed to keep it from getting brown.
Doesn't work for me. But now they have a thing called a guac lock, which looks like a little Tupperware container, but it has a thing on the top where it sucks the air out, which is what makes the brown happen, right? So you can put your guacamole in there, you know.
It almost looks like a tambourine, right? I mean, it's got this, like, thin membrane that somehow, like you said, sucks the air out.
No, this looks like the top looks like it's plastic, and it's got a handle on it.
Oh.
And I think you almost pump the air out of it, you know.
Wow.
And, it's very cool. And you know, I've never had one, but I have somebody who tells me it works. So I'm thinking of bringing it into getting one for work, because I use a lot of, you know, avocado puree, stuff like that, and we're constantly, you know, fighting that little brown surface that comes to the top. So I think that again, it's like $19, you know, you get this thing. I think it holds up to 24 ounces of guacamole, which is more than anybody should eat at one sitting anyway. So, you know, you wind up putting it away and putting it in the refrigerator, and the next day or 2 days later, you get in the mood again. Oh, my God, you know, Martha got a new bag of chips.
Oh, my God. I'm going to Williams and Sonoma.
Really?
They have the guac lock.
Do they really?
Yeah. $19.95.
There you go. See, it's $20.
And it's got, just like you said, it's got some sort of lever that must suck the air out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's genius, actually, you know. I can't believe I haven't thought about it, because I've, you know, tried to devise, you know, millions of ways to make the guacamole, you know, hold up better, and haven't been successful. But anyway, let's take a break. We'll pay some bills here, and we'll come back, and we'll do a little more chatting about gifts, and I'll tell you about a restaurant I went to and all kinds of other stuff. We can compartmentalize the rest of the show.
Maybe a detour here or there.
Maybe.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to freshfingourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's fresh, F-I-N, gourmet.com.
You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
That's me, all three of me. Anyway, continuing in that vein of gifts for the cook, this one's close to my heart because there's the only thing that I like making more than fish, because, you know, I'm a fish guy, is pasta. I think pasta is the quintessential comfort food. I think everybody should have pasta at every meal. You know, I probably should have been born Italian. But, you know, when you go to Italy, that's what they do. They eat pasta with everything. It's like, and the great part is they don't give you a lot. You know, they give you just, I think, the size of your fist or something, they say, you know.
So let me just throw this out so we make sure our listeners know about freshfingourmet.com. Mm-hmm. They can provide you with seafood and other specialty items like that. They can also provide you with some desserts, and they also have pasta. So there, you're talking about seafood and pasta?
Yeah, yeah.
And freshfingourmet.com.
They have both.
Could be the place you go to.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, there's all kinds of pasta machines out there, right? I have a pretty big one at work, and it's, you know, you plug it in, it goes, it's great, but it's, you know, it's expensive, right? But they have this, Imperia makes one that's about $100 maybe. And it's kind of a hand roller. I mean, you know, you got to kind of roll it with your hand. But it's really cool. It clamps to the, you know, to the table so it doesn't move. It comes with two different types of rollers, you know, one for regular flat sheets of pasta, like for ravioli or lasagna, and one that has two settings where you can cut linguine and or fettuccine on there, which is really the only thing you need.
Yes, I assume there's some fancy ones that are electric, the hand one you're saying.
Yeah.
But that seems like the easy part. What about creating the dough for it?
Well, the dough's easy. I mean, the dough's, you know, it's flour, water, eggs, you know, sometimes not, and salt. I mean, it's really not much to it. It's just a question of kneading it, getting it together, kneading it, and then, getting it through the machine. And there's really nothing like fresh-made pasta, you know, when you make it yourself. And it's also fun for kids too. It's like, you know, there's nothing that's more fun to get kids involved with. You know, they get flour all over themselves, the kitchen's a mess, they got it on their face, it's cute as hell, you take pictures, you show it to them when they're teenagers. It's just, it's a lot of fun. And they learn that, you know, food doesn't come from, you know, the store so much, it comes from, you know, other places, other sources.
So can you actually take the pasta as it comes out of the machine and actually cook it, or
yeah.
It has to cure?
No, you can let it rest for a little bit. But, like if you're going to make ravioli, I mean, you could just, you know, make the ravioli, stuff them. And they have these molds for ravioli, which is probably, if you're going to buy this, you know, you should probably go the extra $30 and get the mold. And it comes, it's like a rectangle with kind of shaped slots in it, you know, and you lay the pasta over that, right? And then you fill the indentations with whatever you're going to fill it up, and you lay another sheet of pasta over that and roll over it with a hand roller.
So with the ravioli like this, but the way to cook it is on a pan with some sauce, and then you put the ravioli and then you put it in the oven, or?
No, you boil it. You boil it. Yeah, boil it first. So,
but not manicotti and stuff like that.
Manicotti has to be, you know, manicotti is a crepe, really. It's not really a pasta. It's like a batter.
So ravioli really is made to be boiled.
Yeah, okay. Sure. So what's great about those molds is, like I said, you lay the second sheet of dough over, you know, the filling, and you take a hand roller, you know, like a roller, and like a pastry roller, and roll over it, and it cuts automatically. And then you dump them out, and you got 12 raviolis, and repeat the process.
Am I right that you said you can cheat and use wonton wrappers?
Yeah. Wonton wrappers are great, you know, if you don't have a pasta machine. But and because they're thin every time, they're perfect, you know. And I don't know how to get them that way. I mean, I picture a bunch of, you know, Japanese or Chinese women in a factory somewhere kind of rolling them out, and they're fabulously thin.
Well, I always wonder.
But, you know, you got to make them one at a time. That's a pain in the neck, you know?
Yeah, no, the way. Well, first of all, to have the machine and to involve the family in the production is pretty cool.
So who?
But when you talk about, when I talk about the wonton wrappers and stuff, I wonder how people wrap wontons and egg rolls and all those things.
They do it by hand. You know, years ago, I was in Chinatown, and I was invited back into this factory, and it was like 20 women back in there just making egg rolls, you know? So, I mean, I don't know if they have egg roll machines now. I mean, who knows? You know, they have machines that can do anything.
And even
much.
The Chinese noodles. I mean, do they just make strips and drop it into the oil?
I don't know. I don't know what they do with it. You know, I know I've seen them do that whole twist and turn thing, you know, when they're shaking them around. And, you know, I don't really follow that cuisine much. I'm not a big Chinese food guy for whatever reason. And, but it's interesting to watch, you know, the Asian culture. I mean, it's been around a long time. You know, they figured all this stuff out, and it's kind of cool to watch them.
So if you're making the raviolis the way you said you're making them with a mold or whatever,
right.
So you put your ingredients, and I guess the ingredients are endless. You can have butternut squash, you can have lobster, you
sure.
can have cheese, you can have meat. What's the best care for that? I mean, do you freeze it? Do you use it, you know, do you make it fresh for the Sunday meal?
What, the raviolis itself? Yeah, well, there's a couple, yeah, all of the above. I mean, you can boil them right away and you know, and make a sauce on Sunday afternoon. Or you can freeze them. And they freeze, you know, they have these resealable bags now, you know. So you can even freeze portion sizes, you know. It's kind of the way we do it in a restaurant. If we freeze anything, it's because it's easier. It's just one, you know exactly how many. You're not sitting there counting ravioli, you know, just drop them in. But that's what's great about pasta. It's, you know, you can freeze it. You can use it fresh. You can use it dried. You know, the accompaniments or condimentos are endless. You know, this time of year I like making ravioli with celery root. And a little bit of ricotta cheese. Celery root has a nice, really mild flavor. Pureed chestnuts is another great winter ravioli that you don't see around too much, which is fun also. And then, you know, then all the usual suspects. Pumpkin in the fall, you know, lobster and shrimp in the summer. You know, it's ricotta cheese any time of year. You know, it's just fun. And you get, you know, you make them in. You know, like they have these commercial lobster raviolis. I don't use them. People always dropping stuff off here, taste this and try it. And it'll taste the same to me. It's like the lobster's really ground up, you know, fine.
Well, we've talked about that. Is it better to have, like, let's call it chunks as compared to pureed?
Yeah, because you know what it is. I mean, you know, when you have that mystery meat in there, you know, it could be anything. I mean, it could be stuffing, you know, cod in there, almost like that sea leg stuff or whatever, you know, which is, you know, just an abomination, really. So lobster ravioli, I would tend to make myself. There's commercial raviolis that I'll buy, you know, buy like a burrata ravioli or something because it's convenient for me. You know, help is the biggest problem in our business these days. You know?
And we've talked about it. What's so intriguing is as endless as the stuffing in a ravioli is, so are the sauces that are, I mean, anything from, I guess, beurre blanc to a heavier.
Yeah, you can even go vinaigrette. I mean, I've served pasta with vinaigrettes.
Wow.
You know, which is kind of cool, too, you know, warm vinaigrette. You know, case in point, pesto can be like a vinaigrette. You know, it can be light like that. You can make it like a little soupier, for lack of a better term. Or you can do, you know, like you can do a nice, like a sort of a mushroom ravioli with like a warm truffle vinaigrette, you know, which would blend very nicely with it. So
if you're using the pesto sauce, what's a good pairing? What's a good stuffing for the ravioli? Cheese?
Yeah, cheese, tomato, you know, anything light like that. You know?
Tomato?
Yeah.
As a stuffing?
Yeah, well, you dice tomato in the cheese, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you get that flavor there. And, you know, anything light like that. I would say along the cheese line, You know, anything heavier would require, I think, a little more.
I never
moxie.
Thought about that, dicing tomato into the cheese stuffing.
You could also do the, you could also use something like a shrimp ravioli with a pesto, or a lobster ravioli with a pesto would be kind of cool too, you know. That would work. So, you know, you have to think light flavors, because basil is a real, you know, summery kind of a light thing. You know, I wouldn't put, you know, I wouldn't make a braised, you know, short rib ravioli and serve it with pesto. As you'd think, I mean, you would never put pesto on a steak. It wouldn't make any sense, you know. But you would put it on a tomato.
You so would what
put
would
it
you
cheese.
Do with that short rib ravioli?
Well, you know, a couple of things. I mean, you know, right now I'm serving a short rib ravioli at the club with a sauce made from butternut squash. So it's kind of, it's like an interesting pairing. It's seasonal, but it's one that most people wouldn't think of.
No, because unfortunately what I would think of, and it probably would be disastrous and not necessarily my taste, but almost like a barbecue sauce, which would be terrible.
That would
but
be terrible.
What you're talking about is incredible.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is tomatoes, you know, go great with that, you know. So I would make like a fresh tomato sauce or something like that, you know, would be good. Or a meat sauce, you know. Bolognese would be good. If you wanted to just do, sometimes you could stew down some, you know, short rib with almost make like a kind of like a almost like a chili out of it, but not really chili. You know, you'd be braised short rib right on top with some mushrooms and like a brown sauce. You know, the same sauce that the short rib was cooked in. But I thought that the we tried the butternut squash with it in the kitchen. Everybody loved it. It was one of those things where, you know, it was born out of necessity. I had these butternut squash hanging around, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do with it? You know. You know, you don't want it to go bad on you, you know, and things get a little slow this time of year. So so I made this sauce, butternut squash and sage and all that. And we put it on the ravioli with the short rib, and it really kind of contrasted real well with it. So we've been selling it. We've sold a lot of it, actually. It sells pretty well. You know?
And is that usually as an entree or an appetizer?
I prefer ravioli as appetizers. I think it's just too much as an entree. It just gets heavy after a while and monotonous. I think a little bit of that is a great idea. Pasta in general, I'm more of a fan of, you know, the
you
pasta
said small.
Course. You know, small courses between your appetizer and your dinner. And I think that, you know, to have a big bowl of pasta, you know, it's fine. But, you know, you walk away from the table feeling like you're kicked in the stomach. I tell you, I was at I stopped in a place I haven't been in a long time. There's a place in Huntington called Jonathan's. And it's right on, I believe it's on Wall Street. And, you know, it's blocked off now because they have the big Christmas tree there. And I haven't been there in a long time. And I go to Huntington generally on Tuesday nights because Mike Dorio does this, was doing this open mic night thing. So I went down there. I would play with him once in a while. And I walked around a block, and it's been closed on Tuesdays. And I walked past it like 2 weeks ago, went to see the tree. And they were open. I'm like, oh, I got to get back in there. So I went in last Tuesday. And, you know, I had dinner at the bar. And Tito, the chef, who I know a long time, he's been there forever. It's got to be at least 20 years, I would think, you know. Came out to say hello, and the owner knew me, and he came over to say hello. We had a conversation about the state of the restaurant business, pandemic, this, that, and the other thing. But he had, you know, I'm a sucker for black linguine. As soon as I see squid ink linguine, I'm in, you know. So he had that with shrimp and tomatoes, and it was very good, you know. But... And I'm gonna. When next time I see him, I'm gonna yell at him. He didn't take the tails off the shrimp, which is annoying as hell.
Right, but aren't you the one? Somebody said to me that sometimes the tail is kept on because it adds to the taste of the sauce if it's cooked in a sauce.
That wasn't me.
Okay.
Yeah, the shells will add flavor. But, you know, they're hell on the gums, you know what I mean? You don't want to chew them, right?
You know, I find I despise when shrimp are served with the tail. And then you get into the times when people have fried shrimp and they eat the shell.
Yeah, no, I have a friend that eats the shells. I eat the shrimp heads when I go to, you know, a Japanese restaurant, the really crazy Japanese restaurants. I'll eat the shrimp heads, but you know the tail is just it's really not it's edible, but it's, you know, who wants to, you know, there's nothing there, right? So now I got to figure out, I either have to cut them and lose that little bit where the shell comes up the shrimp.
Well, that's a whole nother thing. So some people they stop when they hit the shell,
right?
Then because I'm very I always want to make sure I get all my value. I pinch it out.
I do, too.
So I'll take a fork, and then I'll pinch it out. And many times, if it's, like, served as my entree, I'll get rid of all the shells right from the get-go then enjoy the rest of my meal.
No, you get all the hard work out of the way in the beginning. No, it's true. And, you know, so I'm looking at this thing. It's like six or seven shrimp in it. I'm like, God, what am I going to do here, you know? And, like, I don't want to lose that little piece of meat. Not that it matters, but it matters, right? And I'm not going to go in there with the knife because I have a butter knife. It's a pain in the neck. So, you know, I'm trying not to be a slob. I mean, get that, you know. So I pick up the shrimp, you know, and I pinch the tail and I bite it. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Okay, I got that. It's not too messy. I put it down. I wipe my fingers on a napkin. I pick up the second one. And somehow my fingers, you know how they snap? They come. It went like this.
Oh.
The shell goes up in the air. I got tomato sauce on my forehead and my glasses and in my hair. Now I'm furious. I'm in full-blown Tourette's at the bar, you know, in my head. You know, I'm thinking of all those big long ones with the K's in them, the 11-letter curse words and stuff, you know. And I tell you, if I had Tito in front of me, I'd have strangled him at the NAM channel.
So this is a perfect opportunity to reach out to our listeners for this week's intrigue. How do you get your shrimp out of the shell? So please write us at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And then also, when you have your paper towels, you know, underneath the cabinet, do you have it come over the top or come underneath?
That's kind of like toilet paper, man, you know.
Well, I'm trying to keep it, you know, in the spirit of kitchen gadgetry.
So speaking of black linguine, my grandkids got a puppy for Christmas, right? And he's a little black lab.
And don't tell me its name is Linguini.
No, it's the cutest thing in the world, right? So my granddaughter calls me up. She goes, Paco, we're trying to think a name for the dog. I want to call him Rains. I said, Rains? You know, like it's raining out? She goes, no, Rains, like the reindeer brought him with Santa Claus. So I think, you know, I think he was on the sled with the reindeer. And I'm like, oh, I get it, you know. She goes, but Mommy said that you're creative and could you come up with a name? Because we're trying to figure out a name. I said, yeah, he's black, right? She goes, yeah. I said, okay, Squid Ink. She goes, what? I said, Squid Ink. It rolls right off the tongue. Squid Ink, come here. Squid Ink, come on. Dinner's ready, you know. It's Paco, you're ridiculous, you know. So I was outvoted. It's not going to be Squid Ink. Anyway, getting back to the gifts. I got another one for you. And this one's a real cool one. You ever make tortillas by hand?
Tortillas?
Yeah. You know, for like tacos?
I usually buy the shells,
right.
I have
Most
to admit.
Most people do, right. Now, the difference between fresh tortillas and the ones that you buy.
Because I really like soft tortillas, so I would prefer to come to your kitchen for it.
They're fabulous, and all you need is a little taco press. And they're like $30. They have cast iron, and they have the lever on it. You know, and they have the two things. You put a little bit of wax paper on either side. You mix the taco, the masa harina with water and a little bit of salt, and you're good to go. And you make little balls like the size of golf balls. Boom. Press it down. You just saute them off, and you got fresh tacos.
Am I going to wake up in the middle of the night, and there's going to be this infomercial,
Paco's Tacos.
Taco.
Yeah, Paco's Tacos.
Paco's Taco Press.
I like it. I may have to get a brick-and-mortar store. Paco's Tacos. Anyway, let's take a quick break on that. We'll sell some advertisement, and we'll come back.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, we were briefly talking about tacos, and I promise you that if you go buy one of these things, like I said, it's $30, and get yourself some masa harina, which is the, you know, the corn flour that, you know, you make the tacos with. Follow the instructions on the back. It's just water and salt. You know, you mix it up. You'll get a feel for it. It'll feel like Play-Doh. You know, and you make these little balls, maybe the size of a golf ball, and you press it down in these presses, and you just put them, you know, make them all, put them on like a little towel or something, and then you get a flat pan with nothing in it, you know, it's just a hot pan, and you cook them on both sides, and I promise you, that taco that you make with that, you'll never buy store-bought tacos again. It really takes very little effort. It's probably the most reward for the least effort in all of food.
But that's going to kill the demand for those taco racks that they sell for the hard tacos.
The dipping, yeah. You know, the hard tacos to me, man, why, you know? I mean, it's such, you know, tacos is another thing. It's like ravioli. I mean, the fillings are endless. You know, you can just do, I mean, I do taco bars at weddings and stuff, you know. And we'll do mushrooms. I'll do pulled pork. I'll do, you know, braised short rib.
Well,
I'll do blackened
shrimp.
That's
the Dirty Taco. I guess that's a local restaurant. There's three or four locations at this point. And they do, just like you said, anything from burnt Brussels sprout to chicken and peanuts and whatever.
Yeah, no, it's anything you can think of. You can sit between, you know, two loaves of bread. It's the same as a taco. And there's much more flavor there, you know? You have that corn flavor. And then the salsas that go on it. You know, you have a mix of salsas and mayonnaises, you know, chipotle aiolis and all kinds of cheeses, you know, cajeta cheese. And it's just fabulous.
Yeah, you can go anywhere from sweet to super spicy, right?
Totally. I used to make a key lime taco for dessert. I would do it with flour, but I would fry the flour taco and then fill it with a key lime curd like you would get in key lime pie. And I had cilantro syrup on there and some mango in there and stuff like that. It was a kind of a cool little thing, you know? And unusual.
Is there a such thing as a dessert taco?
Well, that was it. We had a key lime taco. But you can make, you know, pastry cream and put it in almost like a crepe, you know, but it'd be hard and fried, you know. And then, you know, you fill it with, let's say, pastry cream, and you can make a Boston cream taco if you wanted to, you know, dip part of the thing in chocolate, you know. There's all kinds of things you can do with them that's, you know, if you just use your imagination a little bit. You'll come up with a bunch of things. And the great part about the internet is, like, you know, unlike the encyclopedia, you know, its volumes, you just tap in and, you know, you get whatever you want.
Well, that's interesting. Just like you said, I mean, that's a great catering hall item, you know, if you have a taco bar.
Yeah.
I mean, the in thing a couple of years ago was the mashed potato bars, right?
Pass me a pistol. I mean, that was the dumbest thing I ever saw in my life. You know, toppings and, you know, I mean, it was a cold bacon and some was terrible.
And today, I mean, the other thing, it's not quite the same, but usually there's like three or four mac and cheeses put out at an affair. You know, they'll do lobster mac, they'll do this, that, and the other.
Yeah, I think that's fading out a little bit. I mean, I remember when that was really all the rage, and you know, some of it's fun. I mean, you know, we all like mac and cheese. It takes you back to your childhood, you know. But they, you know, just I think it got overplayed, you know, like a lot of things do. And you know, now I don't see people ordering it much, you know. I'll put it on every once in a while, usually for the kids, you know, because they like it. But it's probably not good for you, you know, like mucky cheese and stuff, you know. Anyway, one more I got for you, and this is a good one if somebody's, like, buying their first house or moving into a new apartment or they just bought a condo or something, a young kid starting out. And OXO, you know that company, OXO? It's like a capital O, X, capital O.
They make a lot of accessories.
They make a lot of kitchen utensils, stuff like that. They have this 15-piece, like, starter set or whatever, you know. And it includes everything. It's got tongs, it's got spatulas, it's got, you know, spoons, you know, with perforated, with holes in them and not, you know. There's a strainer, there's a pasta cutter, there's a pizza wheel. I think there's a grater or two in there. And it's fabulous. This is one, and it comes in a holder, you know, and it sits on your counter. It's got everything you need to start your stuff, you know. And it's about $100 or whatever, but it's a great little, you know, I find that I don't cook in home kitchens very often. It happens infrequently. Usually when my granddaughter asks me to, you know, make dinner, I'll struggle through it. But it's always nice to have that there because you're always reaching for something. You know, when you have them in a drawer, you're like, what drawer did I put it in? Where's the strainer? Or I don't have a knife. And that's the one, I should say that was the second to last thing. The last thing that I would advise you to get somebody who's serious about cooking is a good knife. And a good knife is indispensable if you're going to be cooking, because you're going to be cutting a lot of stuff. I prefer those French knives with the rounded tip. I don't like the pointy tip. And I like smaller ones. I like 7 inches, not the 9 or 10 inches or the 12 inches. I think they're too clumsy. And for most people, I think that's a good, you know, especially at home, that's a good size. It's not too big. It's not, you know, going to get out of the way.
You should, if you only could, the listeners could only be in the studio, because as he's talking about this, he's busy chopping.
I'm chopping, yeah. It's kind of, you know, I'm doing the Italian thing. I'm talking with my hands, you know. But anyway, and there's all kinds of great ones out there. I mean, Henkel, this, that, and the other thing. And you don't have to spend a fortune. I mean, I used to buy very expensive knives when I was a kid. And, you know, it was pride in the knives. And, you know, but, you know, they get beat up in the kitchen, commercial kitchen. They get stolen, they get taken. Somebody's chopping, you know, onions on a stainless steel table with it, you know. So I don't do that anymore. I buy, you know, cheaper ones and then replace them and just throw them away, whatever, if they get... and a good stone to sharpen it on, because it's critical to have a sharp knife. You know, they always say that, you know, you cut yourself more with a dull knife than you do with a sharp knife. That may be true, but when you cut yourself with a sharp knife, it's usually a Lulu, you know, so you got to be careful, you know. But a sharp knife is actually less dangerous, because it goes where you want it to go, where the dull knives, you know, especially with carrots or something, you know, slip off. And so anyway, a good knife is a great investment, and you don't have to spend more than $35-$40, you know, for a knife like that.
So, Tom, I sit here looking face to face with you and realize that this is our last show before Christmas.
Yes, it is.
So next week, when everybody tunes in, it will be the day after Christmas.
Yes, it will.
So any words of wisdom to our listeners?
My only words of wisdom with Christmas is I think some of the spirit of it has been lost to the commerciality. And I think that if we can get back to some of that, even as a, you know, I don't want to make this bigger than it is, as a country. I mean, we've gone this commercial sort of silliness route with almost everything we do. And Christmas is a, you know, a victim of it also. And I think that if we get back to, you know, spending time with each other and listening to each other and breaking bread, I think we'd have a lot less troubles in the world, you know?
Well, I just want to thank our listeners for putting up with me. Some think I'm a little too chatty.
What about me? Forget them, you know?
Sometimes a little too goofy, but I must say I am so humbled to be included in this project that Tom has, which is probably going on like 14 or 15 years now, Playing with Fire.
Yeah,
and
it's been a while.
I mean, I was involved with the original setup of it, but I wasn't on air, and through... Tom's cordiality and necessity, here I sit next to him, and again, many times I think it's like Laurel and Hardy, in the sense that Tom is so knowledgeable and I'm so stupid.
Inquisitive.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
But this has really been a lot of fun. This year was a great year, and we can talk a little more next week about New Year's and we're thankful for. But we were on the road one time, and it's just been great. And
yeah, it's been fun.
I'm truly do enjoy our sessions together.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to have you as a co-host. I mean, you know, you add a lot to the show, and you take me in directions I would have never gone by myself, generally. But I think it's all fun, and I think the listeners enjoy it. I mean, from all the feedback we've gotten, it's been pretty
And I get
positive.
Such a kick around the studio here. There's so many people. We have our sales staff and office staff, but people keep saying, do you have a copy of Tom's book so we can get it autographed? And there's like a scarcity of Playing with Fire.
Well, you can still get it, you know, on Amazon. If you go on Amazon, they're available. And a new one will be out hopefully in March. Second Helping, it's called. And more of the same, you know, more crazy customer stories and, you know, unhinged cooks and the comically disturbed, you know. It'll be out there for all to read. And it's, again, about another 85, 90 stories in there, you know. So hopefully it'll be the last one, you know, of that, because I don't want to become this one-note song here, one-trick pony. But anyway, look for it in March, and I'll let you know when it comes out. It'll be exciting for me and hopefully for everybody else. So with all of that, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, as usual, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal, and I mean every meal, like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Attention seafood lovers. Introducing FreshFinGourmet.com. Now you can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. The holidays are coming. Order all the delicacies for the Night of Seven Fishes. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packing and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to freshfingourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's fresh, F-I-N, gourmet.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized sized desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible
Amano
gallery.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.